Today we're doing a very powerful session called Divine Therapy, which is really about how the Lord uses centering prayer to purify the heart. And you know, you could talk for hours about this, but I'm just gonna hit a couple of basic background points, and then really there's just one thing you need to do different. That's how easy this is. Slightly different from what we've discussed before when things bubble up. So just let's back up. In Jeremiah, God says, "I will refine them like silver and test them like gold. They will call on my name and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is our God." There's a refining process. We know that the Father is super committed to, we spoke about it before, how it's like molten metal and impurities float to the surface under heat, which either comes, in my view, from pressure, meaning suffering, or from the love of God melting our hearts. And then stuff comes up, and then He cleans it, repeat, 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 all of our lives until the metal is so perfectly reflective of His own face. And that's what He's doing with us. But this process is, I'll tell you my experience, 25 years as a committed Christian, and some healing happened just with hearing the scriptures, hearing, beginning to understand. Some things fell off me. Some healing came through the love of the body of Christ, relationships and working through stuff. Then I went through a journey of, you've probably heard the term, things like SOZO, and there were different counseling methods, really, where you would get into God's presence, and then people would pray, and then you'd kind of follow up on images and pictures you had, and that would lead sometimes to remembering a traumatic thing, and then you'd get healed. And so that was wonderful, and I experienced a lot of healing, but I must tell you that I also felt that I hit a ceiling at one point and felt like I'm going nowhere. And so that brings me to today, where this process for me in the last 2 years has suddenly taken the ceiling away. And maybe you guys have heard of there's this whole kind of set of books and thinking called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality by Peter Scazzero. I don't know if you guys have heard about it. A friend of mine was telling me about it yesterday. It employs a very similar practice to this, silence. He recommends it 4 times a day, and it's all about cleaning up and healing the heart. But he uses this fantastic metaphor, which I'm going to use now. And he says our lives are like an iceberg. And what we're conscious of and live with most of our lives is the tip of the iceberg. That's what you can see. That's what's above the water. But below the water, we know, is a mass that's multiples, 50, 100 times bigger than the little point you see outside the. And that is your unconscious world, and it's also your spirit. And that whole line of thinking goes that emotionally healthy, to really get there, you have to get into the bottom of the iceberg, what's under the surface, under the water. So the question is, how do you do that? Because you can't see it. It's not in your mind. And that's exactly where this is taking. So Thomas Keating, in this book that I recommend, Open Heart, Open Mind, uses the term divine therapy, that and it's very biblical. God is committed to transforming us into the image of Christ. And so what is he, let's just back up a little more, what is he transforming us of? Well, Keating uses the term the false self, and I love that term, and I'm going to use it a lot. But just in case you're wondering, where's that in the Bible, because I keep getting that on Facebook in response to our posts, it's like, where's it's called the sinful nature, it's called the flesh. That's in right. Some translations, it's Keating talks about 3 big parts of the false self: the unhealthy need for control, the unhealthy need for affirmation, and the unhealthy need for for security. Everything pretty much falls into those three buckets. What's fascinating is that's extremely similar to the temptations that Jesus faced in the desert, which exemplify what the sinful nature is, the three things he went through, or that 1 John 2 describes, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, which are again exactly what Jesus faced. Now, I'm not going to spend time trying to draw lines between them, but if you think about it, you'll see that. What's crazy about neuroscience is neuroscience has actually shown that certain of those things, like the lust of the flesh, that it's been located in different parts of our brain. So lust of the flesh, the gentle example of that is I just eat too much. I can't control what I eat. I mean, other examples would be kind of sexual impurity and that type of thing. Well, that's your amygdala. That's a part of your brain back here. And when that stuff is out of control in your life, neurologically, it's because a neural pathway is connected from that part of your brain to a part of your brain where some need is triggered. So you have a fear, and then you go and eat. I'm saying that because nobody here on this call would possibly have that problem. I mention the science here just because there's a spiritual way that God works when he, say, sets you free of the need to eat linked to some fear. But there's also a rewiring of the brain where that neural pathway is diverted and cleaned up, and a new neural pathway is created that no longer connects to your need to eat when you have fear. So that's why this stuff is so powerful. I do want to quickly say, we at small group, which Vic wasn't at, but we forgive him, we kind of didn't use the iceberg analogy, but I just want to say there's two ways that our lives are like an iceberg. The one way is there's a lot going on in our inner world that might include brokenness that we aren't aware of and that God will refine. That's what we're talking about today. But the other part of our iceberg is huge. And that is the entire spiritual nature, the power of God. There's so much down there under the water that is yet to come out and be experienced in our lives. And here's what's awesome, and I know, Pete, you've been banging on about this, is the big reason why we don't see the power of God, why we don't see true spirituality, is because we think it's up there and maybe somehow I could try to bring it down here. But actually, it's in the iceberg, which is you. And the only issue is it's below the surface of the water. So if your faith could connect to it under the surface of the water to know what's there, you'd start seeing healing. The presence of God on you so powerfully when you're sitting with other people that they smell it, they feel it, whatever, wisdom, discernment, etc. So we want to get into the iceberg, and the point is that this meditation and centering prayer gets us down there. I want to just say one last thing, and then I'm going to read from Thomas Keating a few paragraphs and talk to them. There's only one thing. So this is how it's going to work. This is what's going to happen. We've been talking about the concept. You're going to be in your time of centering prayer. And last week we described how there are three different types of thoughts. There's the random distractions of the mind. There's emotionally charged thoughts. And then there's wonderful good thoughts about God. When the refining is happening, it's that second type of thought that arises. It's an emotionally charged thought. It's so you're having your time of centering prayer, and a thought comes, but it brings a flood of emotions. And sometimes that can actually impact you for the rest of the day or for days. You could suddenly feel, wow, just hit this wave of anxiety or depression. There's just a greater level of anxiety. That kind of stuff is divine therapy. It's when something is coming out from under in the bottom of the surface of the water, the iceberg. It's coming up here, and God's about to wipe it away and heal it. So there's only one thing you need to do different. You still are going to deal with that thought, that emotionally charged thought, with your sacred word. What is your sacred word? It's repeating that prayer to say, Christ, I want your presence and your action in my life. I don't want this. I.e. not getting into the boat. But there's one other little thing. This is the only thing that's different. And I'll read it to you. Keating explains that sometimes the best way to let go of that kind of thought is to sink into it.
Without getting in the boat?
Yes, not so you're not letting your mind think about the reasons, but if you're feeling anger, you like go into that anger and I'm not saying you become angry, but you examine it and you feel it. Why? And that, you see, because what that is acceptance. That you're accepting what's existing. Almost anything else is repression. It's no, anger, bad. I don't think, yeah. And so sometimes these emotionally charged thoughts will be so strong, you can't just say your sacred word and say, I'm not getting in the boat. It's like it's riveting you. You can't return your intention to God. And then the answer is sink into it. He puts it a lot better, so I'll read from him.
So think about it as an opportunity rather than a negative thing. It's an opportunity to be cleaned by the love of the Father.
Yes. Well, okay. let me read you how he puts it here. And this chapter 7 of this book, it's amazing. So this is what Thomas Keating says. He says, one way to deal with intense restlessness, physical pain, or emotions such as fear and anxiety that arise, and so let me back up. Intense emotions, like he says, fear and anxiety or anger or something like that, but it can also manifest in physical pain and intense restlessness, okay? And so he says, one way to deal with these things at such times of unloading, because that's when it's coming out of the iceberg, is to rest in the painful feeling for a minute or two and allow the pain itself to be your prayer word. In other words, one of the best ways of letting go of an emotion is simply to feel it. Painful emotions, even some physical pains, tend to disintegrate when fully accepted. So that's the one thing. Today's lesson is got 2 points. Number one, be happy when there's nonsense, anxiety, stress coming out, because it's stuff that's part of God's process coming out of the iceberg. Don't feel, oh gosh, I'm not good at this type of meditation, I can't do it. No, it's working. It's what needs to happen in your life. But secondly, the one tweak is try to just let it go with a sacred word, try to let the boat float by, but actually what's busy happening is you unloading a big impurity out of your life. You can't just let it go. And so you sink into it in the way we've kind of described here. Let me read a few other things. We've got a lot of, come on in, man.
Sorry, I'm so
late. Hey, this is okay. You came in time for the good stuff. I'm gonna end with just one or two quick readings from Keating here. The emotional residue in our unconscious emerges during prayer in the form of thoughts that have a certain urgency, energy, and emotional charge to them. You don't usually know from what particular source or sources they are coming. There's ordinarily just a jumble of thoughts and a vague or acute sense of uneasiness. Simply putting up with them and not fighting them is the best way to release them. Okay? He says here, when you practice contemplative prayer on a regular basis, your natural resources for psychic health begin to revive, and you see how the false self and its value systems are damaging your life. The emotional programs of early childhood that are buried in your unconscious begin to emerge in clear and stark awareness. If you let them go, you will gradually unfold into the presence of God and enjoy His presence. The inner dynamism of contemplative prayer leads naturally to the transformation of your whole personality. Its purpose is not limited to your moral improvement. It brings about a change in your way of perceiving and responding to all of reality. This process involves a structural change of consciousness. I just love this. After you've been doing this prayer for some months, so for some of you that are new, you can relax. This is only going to happen in about a month's time. After you've been doing this prayer for some months, you will experience the emergence of certain forceful and emotionally charged thoughts. They don't normally reveal some traumatic experience in your early life or some unresolved problems in your present life. They simply emerge as thoughts that arise with a certain force or that put you in a depressed mood for a few hours or even days. Such thoughts are of great value from the perspective of growth, even though you may feel persecuted by them during the whole time of prayer. So this is so powerful. Drew was telling me a great story yesterday, and I won't get into the details, but it just felt like he had some incredible experiences. And after something that happened in centering prayer, he just felt super tired for the rest of the day. That's a great example of when this is happening. And you, as I said, you could feel anxious for a day, but it's because something's coming up and the refiner is taking it and healing it and taking it out of your iceberg. Emotionally charged thoughts are the chief way that the unconscious has of expelling junk, chunks of emotional junk. In this way, without your perceiving it, a great many emotional conflicts that are hidden in your unconscious and are affecting your decisions more than you realize are being resolved. As a consequence, over a period of time, you will feel a great sense of well-being and inner freedom. The very thoughts that you lament while in prayer are freeing your inner man from the damage that has accumulated in your nervous system over a lifetime. In this prayer, both thoughts and silence have important roles to play. I can't stress that enough. That's why I believe, you know, if you were here in the early sessions, I explained that there's concentrative forms of meditation and non-directive forms of meditation like this. The concentrative forms try to use the focus of the mind to stop other thoughts. Why this is more powerful is because you're not suppressing other thoughts. You're simply directing your attention on the spirit, on God, on His presence. And as a result, thoughts can come up that need to come out. And that's why this is so powerful. To use a clumsy simile, in some tenement houses where the garbage collection is unreliable, some tenants use the bathroom to store the garbage. If you want to take a bath, the first thing you then have to do is empty out the junk. A similar procedure holds in this prayer. When we commit ourselves to the spiritual journey, the first thing the Holy Spirit does is to start removing the emotional junk of a lifetime that's inside of us. He wishes to fill us completely and to transform our entire body-mind organism into a flexible instrument of divine love. I just love that. But as long as we have obstacles in us, some of which we are not even aware of, He cannot fill us to full capacity. In His love and zeal, He begins to clean out the bathtub. So that's what's happening. That's almost why, in some ways, today's session is kind of one of the big so whats. I mean, the big so what of this whole centering prayer and meditation is you're going to unlock a huge part of the iceberg that is the power of God, and you're going to start experiencing spiritual things more than ever before, more than your mind could take you to. Secondly, you're going to experience this, which is the parts of the iceberg where there's brokenness, that you become aware of them, and then that they get healed. And then there's a ton of other benefits that I've been through about, you know, you're good for your brain and all that. And actually, these things are all linked. Finally, let me just say this and this. Perhaps for us that know Sozo, explains an important difference. It says, another point worth remembering is this. During the unloading process, sometimes you may want to figure out where a particular smile, itch, pain, or strong feeling is coming from in your psyche, and to identify it with some earlier period in your life. That is useless. The nature of the unloading process is that it does not focus on any particular event. It loosens up all the rubbish, so to speak, and the psychological refuse comes up as a type of compost. It's like throwing out the garbage. You don't separate the eggshells from the orange peels. You just throw the whole thing out. Nobody is asking you to look through it and try to evaluate it. You just throw everything out in one big garbage bag. So one of the powerful things about this process, you suddenly just become free. You don't have to go back to when you were four and the school teacher screamed at you, which some of the other processes do have to do. And that's actually how psychoanalysis works, if you're familiar with it, is you go and relive a trauma. Here you don't have to relive anything, but you do have to deal with when these emotions come up, and they might be there for 5 minutes, 1 hour, or 5 days. So, shall we practice?
Yeah.